Throughout history, monsters haven't just lurked in the dark. They've hunted us. From the remote wilds of Alaska to the blood-soaked hills of 18th century France, stories of beasts, feral, intelligent, and lethal, have clawed their way into legend. But what if some of those stories weren't exaggerated? What if they've been redacted? Tonight, on the Paranormal 360, I'm joined by the paranormal detective himself, Greg Lawson, a 30-year law enforcement veteran, military serviceman, author, and globe-trotting investigator of high strangeness. With experience in real-world tracking and tactical investigations, Greg brings a uniquely grounded lens to the terrifying accounts of the Beast of Javadan, a predator that slaughtered dozens near military precision. And modern reports of a violent, upright, walking creature in Alaska's backcountry that might just prove monsters never left. They've just gotten better at hiding. What you're about to hear isn't fiction. It's what happens when myth leaves a body count. That's tonight on the Paranormal 360. And joining me now on the Coldwell Banker Hotline, we have Greg Lawson. Greg, welcome to the show, sir.
Man, it is my pleasure. Thanks, Dave.
Always great catching up with you. And for those of you that don't know, Greg is a regular part of our Wednesday program, the Paranormal 60 News, which you can watch on YouTube. Greg is also the author of many different books, from How to Be a Paranormal Detective to Diaries of a Paranormalist, Encounters with Death. His newest book, Messages from Mothman, is out and available as well. And we've had him on in the past talking about his book, Roswell, The After Action Report. Amazing author, great researcher, and a gentleman who is fascinated by the strange and supernatural, but keeps himself grounded. Now, the Beast of Javadan, obviously, you and I both have an interest in strange cryptid encounters and these tales, especially when they go off and they become something more than just a legendary beast seen from a distance. But with the Beast of Javadan, these were actual accounts of attacks and a body count left behind. Is that right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that was the strange thing about all of this is, you know, we're talking the 1760s in France, and or pronounced France, you know, if you want to do it correctly. You look at the people, people lived much closer to nature back then, right? Mm-hmm. And they knew what they saw when they went to the woods. They knew these animals that were in the woods. And this was one of those really strange instances in contemporary time. You can say that, you know, it's not ancient history.
Right.
And whatever was there was something very strange.
Now, the way they've described this creature through the years, it almost comes off sounding like the Beast of Bray Road or a dogman encounter, some kind of big, harrowing, almost bipedal pest that is attacking. Did it go beyond just attacking livestock like cattle and sheep and chickens? Were there really humans that were targeted by this creature?
Women and children were targeted by this creature, which even makes it a little bit more interesting and a little more macabre. That is the, you know, that the primary amount of victims were women and children.
And how many are actually attributed to this creature?
Man, it's anywhere from between 80 and 100, primarily women and children. And most of them were out there guarding their livestock, and this creature would actually disregard the livestock completely and go right for the kid or right for the woman.
All right. Now, when you hear these kind of claims, were you able to actually dig up proof in any way, shape, or form that they took place? And this wasn't just some kind of parable or fable to maybe keep people closer to home or keep a closer eye on your flock if you're out there tending to it?
Absolutely. This is French history. The Javadan region, there's a whole lot of stuff written about this. Javadan region is a very isolated, very mountainous, heavily forested area. Primarily, you know, there were farmers and individuals that made their livelihood off of livestock. And you would think, I mean, that's what everybody immediately thought was, you know, a pack of wolves were coming through. They had those types of attacks. And that's what it was initially blamed on. But yeah, it was scary.
Now, were these attacks violent enough to cause death, or were they just mauled by this creature?
Absolutely. Most of them were caused death. There was a lot that were mauled and were able to tell a little bit of their story. But that was the odd thing about it is that their story wasn't super detailed in the normal. What they were describing was something that was completely abnormal to their area and to their experience.
All right. Were these creatures or creature that was attacking them, did they believe it would be something supernatural in nature?
Yeah, that was one of the first things because of, I say the first thing. The first thing, they automatically assumed that these kids and these women were not describing a wolf properly. The attack made sort of sense if the wolf, was sick, had rabies or something else.
Now, there's a lot of talk of things like dire wolves, these huge, almost prehistoric wolves that were much larger than things we would be familiar with today. Would those have been around during that era?
They should not have, but there's no reason why a population of animals like that could not have survived in a much less populated area, higher in the mountains, deeper in the woods, that would have sustained those. But there's no physical evidence of that.
All right. How were they describing this creature? Did they describe it as being something on two legs, bipedal, or were they showing that, you know, this creature did seem more animalistic?
It was more animalistic. Oftentimes the physical description, some people said it was up to the size of a horse. Now there was a few that said that, but most of them described it about the size of a good sized calf, almost a steer. The coloration on it was a tawny, kind of a russet coat, black streaks, white underbelly, and had a long tail, a small head, elongated snout with unusually large and sharp teeth. Now, wolves have big teeth, right? They have fangs, right. They have that. This was something different. When they described this, these teeth were much larger and much different than what you would describe as a wolf.
Were they being rended apart by the teeth or by claws or by both?
Primarily by teeth. There are examples of them being clawed by this creature, but it wasn't like a lion. You know, you weren't being torn apart or latched onto like a lion does.
Okay. When it came to their understanding of this creature, it was something that none of them had ever seen before. So that is what led us more into the supernatural element, right?
Absolutely. You know, and you got to think about at that time, the only thing that you knew, if you grew up in this area, the only thing that you knew is what your parents taught you, what your religious leaders taught you, what you learned from your community, and that's pretty much it. So anything outside of that, naturally, you know, you gravitate to supernatural or something paranormal that you don't understand, and that's not something that they would have a lot of information on.
Now, listen, folks, I know what you're saying. You're thinking cryptids. Okay, again, where is the body? If there's proof that this thing existed, it would have to have left some kind of tracks. It would have left something. Well, in this case, it did. And it is still out there and on display. We'll talk more about that when we return to your home for all things paranormal. This is the Paranormal 360. Greg Lawson, the paranormal detective, our guest this evening, as we are talking about real deadly monster encounters. And to begin tonight's program, we've been discussing the Beast of Javadon in France, this large creature that some have said had been as big as a horse, some as small as a calf. But either way, the one thing that is kind of reported across all of the different sites of this creature is that it did not fit with that area. It was not a known creature. And it was believed that because of this, it would be something supernatural. So talk to me about the evidence of this creature. And, you know, we talk about Bigfoot if they're real or the dogmen if they're real. Why aren't we finding their bodies? Why aren't we finding their skeletal remains? What happened to the Beast of Javadon, Greg?
Well, you know, why we're not finding these skeletal remains, a lot of times, I mean, you go into the you see hundreds and hundreds of deer throughout the year. You go into the woods, you may find one or two bones. Typically, if an animal is killed or it dies in the woods very quickly, creatures will come over and pretty much devour everything. You might find femurs, a hip socket, a scapula or something like that. But for the most part, we don't see that. And easily a large population of, let's say, 200 or 300 creatures could be running around in a deep wood, and we would never know anything about it if they were smart and stayed away from us. That's the problem with this story, is this particular creature was not afraid of humans. It was not afraid of us at all. And you look at it completely circumventing the sheep or whatever the livestock animals were and going straight for the humans. It was crazy. So Louis the 15th was the king at the time. And he actually got his gun bearer. I forget what his name was, Mark Antoine or something like that. Jean Charles Antoine. I probably got that wrong, but anyway, he sent gun bearer. His gun bearer was the guy that carried his guns and was the best, you know, it's like his range master. That was the guy that you would send. And this particular guy went to that region and hunted for a while and ended up killing a very large wolf that he brought back and showed to court and said, hey, this is the wolf. You know, this is what is going on. However, the killings continued and the sightings continued.
Ooh. So that continued to lean into the fact that this was something more than just a wolf.
It was not.
Was there belief that this might have something to do with the fey realm, with the fairies and elemental creatures?
Yeah. Well, and you know, if you could look at it that way from a French perspective, it was more along the lines of a, like you said, it's more like a dogman encounter. However, most dogman encounters that we hear of, they're not attacking people and dismembering them and, you know, dragging them off. And of the individuals that actually survived, and the individuals that died as well, I mean, this creature was attacking primarily the skull of you. When they came after you, wasn't going for your arms and yanking you around and doing that stuff. He was fighting to get to your skull and to crush your skull, eat your skull off, eat your head off. Yeah. This thing was it was a killing machine. But those attacks continued even after his gun bearer went out there and killed a very large wolf.
So what happens next then?
Well, that's what. So there were some other people that obviously wanted that fame. They headed out there to try to hunt this thing down. There were soldiers that went out there and tried to hunt this thing down. And, you know, eventually there were some other theories about what this might have been, as opposed to something natural occurring there in France. It could have been something from another region that the people of France didn't know about.
All right. So maybe another kind of animal that truly existed amongst us, but was a foreigner to that land, or may have crossed a boundary that nobody knew about.
Right. You're looking at a time in France where there was a lot of money being generated. There were a lot of aristocrats around that area. And what do rich people do? They try to find things that other people don't have. They try to have experiences other than what other people have. And so there's some theories that possibly, I mean, like you think about the Colosseum in Rome. What did the Romans do? They traveled all over the place. And when they found weird creatures, they captured them. They brought them back to Rome. They threw them in the Colosseum and would have them attack, you know, slaves and prisoners and that sort of thing, and watch them attack. And so there is a theory that possibly one of these very affluent people in France maybe had their own zoo and either collected or purchased or went and captured animals and brought them back as a private thing. I mean, think about we have celebrities in the United States that do this. Right. So, you know, maybe it was something like that. And maybe one of these creatures got out of there. They didn't understand how powerful it was. It, you know, it's running around on all fours. They don't think it can climb. And then it climbs right out of there.
Well, let's examine the facts and the piece of evidence left behind. Although the marksman was wrong with what he killed, he killed a giant wolf, and the murders or the deaths continued from that point forward. Eventually, another creature was unveiled, and those remains still exist, right? They can be seen in a museum.
Yes. Jardin des Plantes. It's like it would be like the Smithsonian Museum there in France, in Paris. And so, you know, after all the ideas of a large wolf or a wolf hybrid kind of dog kind of thing that maybe is rabid, they came down to these exotic animals. And so when you look at the way a cat will attack, a cat is going to use its claws to latch on, and it's not going to let you go. And at that point also, it's going to have physical evidence of that on the body when you recover right. The body, if it's still there. There's another animal that we can throw in between lions, tigers, bears, wolves, and all that. You throw a hyena in the mix. And then you go back and look at the description of what the French people were saying the animal looked like. It's like, this makes a lot more sense the way they were describing it. They didn't know what a hyena was, but they were describing this animal.
And a hyena can get that big?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, man. They can get really big. And also, you know, just go on YouTube or something like that and look up friendly hyenas in captivity or whatever. Some of these people have these animals as pets, and you can get a really close look at them. And they are big, man. I mean, they're not the size of what they were describing as a horse, obviously, but certainly much bigger than most wolves. And it reminds, you know, when you look at the teeth, it's like that makes more sense because they have a set of choppers, man, that's not like anybody else. It's not like a wolf and it's not like a lion.
Well, how did they end up with the remains that are now at the museum?
Well, that's a good question. There's several different things, and I would tell you exactly how they did it. However, when I went to Jardin des Plantes to go look at these remains, they were closing at 5 o'clock, and I got there at 4:30, and they weren't letting me in. I was like, wait, you said 5 o'clock? They're like, nope, it's 4:30. You can't come in. I was like, I'm leaving for America tomorrow. Can I please come in? And they were like, nope.
All right, we have to take a very quick break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up with the Beast of Javadan, and we'll begin talking about these strange cases in Alaska that appear to show a killer Sasquatch. What's really behind these stories? The paranormal detective is here to tell us, and we'll do that next on the Paranormal 360. All right, so the paranormal detective has been deflected. He is not allowed to enter the museum because he's just a few minutes too late to go see the Beast of Javadan. But they do claim that they have the remains of this creature. Was it eventually caught? Did it die of its own, you know, old age? Did it choke on a human's head? What do you think happened to this creature?
Yeah, I think the legend that I remember, or the legend I believe the most, is that some of the hunters ended up getting this animal. They put it on display and it just, you know, rotted away. They didn't do a taxidermy job or anything like that on it. And one thing led to another as far as it going to court, then ended up, in the archives. And that was the one good thing about this particular, instance. This is a real deal. This is history of France, and it's not just a legend. Although it started off as, you know, some sort of supernatural folklore, a demon or a werewolf, and a lot of people thought maybe it was divine punishment for local sins or something like that. You know, as far as the church talking about that, there was also other vampire suggestions as far as because of the way the attacks were on the skull. But it ended up there, and quite luckily, nobody threw it away, and it ended up in the museum. So,
did they ever do genetic testing to prove that it is a hyena?
I do not know.
All right. Well, one of these days we'll try to return to France and find that out for ourselves, go in and take a look at it. But the photographs that we've seen of the skeletal remains does seem to lean more towards the hyena, correct?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, there's no doubt. There's plenty of zoologists and people that have looked at this thing, and it's a hyena skull. The problem is, like I said, the first time I get back to Paris, I'm going straight there. I'm not eating. I'm not going to get a beer. I'm going straight there so I can see it.
See, it's so easy to dismiss this as nothing more than an escaped exotic pet that might have gotten out and run rampant on the countryside. However, what if it is a skinwalker? What if somebody was bitten on some great African experience by a radioactive hyena and they're brought back and turned into this gnarling, gnashing beast who hungers for human flesh? Something to consider. Obviously, well, the stories of skinwalkers have been around for a long time, that something has the ability to shapeshift and change from one form to another. Does it mean we should summarily throw out all of these cases? According to the Paranormal Detective?
Well, and that's the thing, right, is I'm sure everybody that's listening trusts their government 100%. Everything that everybody in the government is telling us is absolutely the truth. And, you know, if you want people to come to your town and grow your town, grow your city, you know, do amazing things and improve things, the last thing you want to do is say that we have a serial killer in our town. We have the beast of Jovedon that's killing your daughters and wives and sisters and mothers. You don't want that.
Right.
Because when I first looked at this case, you know, I'm not talking about looking at it online and I'm talking about reading it. That was one of the first things I thought of is what a convenient thing for a serial killer, right? Mm-hmm. To be going out. Cause I mean, why would they be picking on women and children? That's what serial killers do. That's not what an animal does. An animal doesn't go, okay, that's a dude and this isn't, and I'm going to go eat that one. You know, it has to be thinking as far as what is dangerous and what is not. And they even shot several, at least two different occasions. They shot, a beast or something that looked like a large wolf type creature. They didn't say it was a wolf, just a looking like a wolf type creature. And the thing just looked at him and turned around, and walked away. So that's very reminiscent of skinwalkers.
Right. And the Skinwalker Ranch stories, the original tales of these beasts that would come through and bullets would seem to hit them and not have any effect.
Nope.
So it leaves it open, right? I mean, obviously it would be a great little tidy bow to say, oh, it was nothing more than a hyena. But if there was something more mystical about this, do we bury that lead so that people come here instead of feeling awkward or frightened for their lives? Fascinating. But now let's, with that concept in mind, let's turn our view to Alaska. And there have been cases like this throughout different parts of the world, but the Alaskan case of the killer Sasquatch really seems to resonate and capture people's attention because that remote area seems like it would be the best place for Bigfoot to live and exist and get away. Walk me through a little bit of the history of this case, Greg, and when it began.
So this particular one is in Port Chatham or Portlock, Alaska. It's down in the southern portion of Alaska, and this was a cannery town. That was the only reason that it was there is during the late 1800s, early 1900s, the salmon business became huge, as profitable as gold. And so all of these people came up there and started, you know, catching salmon, and these companies came up and made these canneries. Immediately they would catch these salmon, process them, throw them in cans and ship them out of there. In this particular area, there's some really great runoff in Port Chatham. And those particular rivers that are right there really created a perfect place for the salmon to run through. So obviously they put a cannery there. On top of that, there was a chromite mine. Chromite is used to make chrome for barrels in weapons like artillery, that sort of thing, and chrome on your vehicles, your bumpers, and things like that. So it was a very popular thing. And you have to look at how this all evolved. We're talking through World War I and also through World War II. So the chromite, the big push on chromite was World War II because they wanted to make their barrels chrome. and also the cannery. You have a ton of people that either couldn't get in the military, were too old to get in the military, or disabled in some way where they couldn't get in the military, because they're taking all able-bodied men, right? What are these guys doing that are operating up there at Portlock? So you're getting people from not that area. They're not local. They're from the lower 48 states, and they're coming up to Alaska. This is pre-being Alaska, pre-being a state for the United States. Also, you have to remember, there was no law enforcement up there at all. So when there was a killing, when there was a murder, when there was an accidental death, no one of an official capacity investigated any of this. And in that area, there were several people that either just disappeared or were found with injuries and dead. And
did they believe that these deaths were taking place by human hands, by wolves, by bears, by things that might have lived and existed in that area? How did it jump to Sasquatch?
So that's the interesting thing about it, right? Anything I've read about that period, you have to go back, read that period. Anything I've read about that period, no, nobody said that this was a human being. Some made a little bit of a suggestion that might have been a bear, but the indigenous population right there said it was an Antinook. It was a Sasquatch. It was a Bigfoot. That did not want them in this sacred area. And this area is sacred to today.
So these protectors, these large bipedal hairy hominid creatures that we know as Bigfoot or Sasquatch, the skunk ape, the wild man, they believe that this thing was protecting the area and it was killing unceremoniously, just destroying things that were getting in their way, taking from the land. This could also fall into a great little fable that the indigenous people might be putting forth, because their land and waters were being raped by these settlers. Let's talk a little bit more about that when we return. Our guest tonight, the paranormal detective Greg Lawson, here on the Paranormal 360. We're talking about the Alaskan Bigfoot murders that took place. No, not people that were murdering Bigfoot, but claims that Bigfoot was actually acting out and killing people. Who was being targeted in this slaughter, and how many people do we believe were actually killed by this creature at the time?
So the people that were being targeted were the people that were working at the chromite mine or were working at the cannery. And that's something you have to look at as far as the chromite mine. It was in operation and out of operation, in operation, out of operation. When you read the original, report that was in, I want to say it was the Anchorage Daily Times, and it was back in the 70s. That's when this, this case was exposed. And in that particular story, they make it sound like this happened within a couple of years, like it's 2 or 3 years. Well, this actually happened over about a 50-year period. So when you look at, let's say you have 400 employees and you have 8 of them die over a 50-year period, you just shrug your shoulders on that, right? That's not, I'm just like, all right, well, but what's mysterious about that? So that's the thing that that's really frustrating for me, because I use industry standards and best practices whenever I do my research. And I have to look at, all right, well, what are the official records? You can look at all of the legends and just the stories that people tell. It's like, all right, something happened. Do we have physical evidence? Do we have any real examples of what happened? In this particular case, no, we don't. Because the only people that were running that area were the people that were working there. And if somebody died, well, they would pack them up and send them back to the lower 48, to their family, wherever that was. And they don't have really good records that they were keeping.
Were these bodies being rended apart? Were there animalistic attacks and evidence left behind on them to make people believe that it wasn't just humanity? I mean, we know about a lot of these settled towns from Butte, Montana to San Francisco, where we found gold and precious metals. There were murders that took place. You could jump their land claims. You could take things over.
Yeah.
what do we know about these murders and how were they being done?
So all of the murders are unintended deaths. Most of the bodies were never recovered. One individual was recovered. He was actually doing some logging by himself because people were actually building their own homes there. They were taking this area is amazing. I actually went down in this area in about 1984 or 1985. I can't remember which year. But I actually was in Alaska. I was in Seward with the Army, and I actually talked some Coast Guard guys to give me a ride over there because they were there for morale, welfare, and recreation fishing groups from the military to go have a little bit of fun. There wasn't anybody there during the week, and I talked these guys into running over there, and it took us – it was about a 10-hour trip all the way around to go over there and take a look at it. The area is completely, I mean, the forest, the trees are so close to each other. There was one building still standing, but there was bear scat everywhere you stepped. Now, the salmon were running while we were there, so the bear were not interested in us. They were just along the creeks and in the streams going for the fish, but it was terrifying if you knew what you were looking at.
Right.
And we spent about 2 hours on the land there, kind of walking around, looking at everything.
But how did it become a Bigfoot? Cause again, it sounds like this is the prime area, a ripe area for bear attack. And if you're getting between the bear and their cubs and their food source, I would guess things would go horribly wrong for you and you would become the meal of the day.
Well, typically, but you can see the bear, you can hear the bear, and everybody up there is carrying a weapon. Everybody that's walking around anywhere out there is going to have a revolver and going to have some sort of long gun with them. So they didn't have that much issue with the bears. The idea behind it was something that was unseen in the woods that did not want them there. There's many descriptions of people just getting that feeling. I got that feeling while I was there. I truly did. When I was there, I was like, this is really uncomfortable. This is not, there's something going on. And you feel like you're being watched the whole time that you're there. So it was a very strange, unusual circumstance, I think. The guy that was doing the logging, they found his body. His head had been crushed. And there was a piece of machinery that he was using that was quite a ways away from him that could have been used to do this. But that's where those legends started coming from. And men would go out to go hunt Dall sheep, and they would go up on the mountain, and there's sheep everywhere up there. And if you don't know what you're doing, and you're up in that area and you're thinking that you're going to go hunt Dall sheep and you'd take one wrong step, you're going to be in a ravine. You're going to be in a canyon somewhere. So there was another individual's body and parts of his body that was found in one of the creeks, one of the runoffs. But the thing about it is when I went up there and when I tried to talk other people into going up with me a couple of years ago, the thing I'm looking for is where are their boots, their belt buckles, and these rifles that they have. If we have another six men that went missing up there, their equipment is still up there somewhere. Now, it might be buried under some silt. It might be something like that. But you get complete break up there. All the snow's gone every summer. So there's not a lot to hide.
So do you believe then that this is some unseen beast or creature? Or do you think it was just the greed of humanity where people killing in order to get access to these, you know, wealth spots for them? And we only have a minute left in this, but I'm just curious what your final take is.
I have to fall back on my training and experience, and this would be a perfect example if we compress the time a little bit, and this would be a serial killer. That would be my first go-to. And then
because it's more comfortable for you as a police officer and former military, or because this is the truth of what most likely goes on in these areas?
Statistically, this would be what it is. Now, these could have been accidents, and if it was over a 50-year period, that's a different story, but we would have to get in there and recreate all that. My other side is the feeling I got there was I can completely understand why they would say there's a tornado or there is this creature in the woods watching us, and it does not want us there.
We look for patterns in the madness, but sometimes the pattern is the madness. Whether it's 1764 or 2024, monsters are real because people keep dying to prove it. Special thanks to our guest, Greg Lawson, the paranormal detective. You've been tuned in to the best in paranormal programming. This is the Paranormal 360.